So right now we're walking up to the site of 4542. We don't have an actual name for it. It's a number created by, I guess, the cultural surveys crew that went in, because Makua has quite a few sites. So the route that we're taking, we went up the center firebreak road. We hung a right about 200 yards, about 100 yards north of Makua Ahu. And right now we got a slight elevation raise, maybe about 50 feet going uphill. And it's been a steady climb from the start. It's not hot, super sunny. And we got maybe 10 mile an hour trade winds. So it's a bit cool.
It's October 2021, and we're back on Cultural Access in the Valley. Today, we're traveling a little farther into the valley than we did back in July. As I walk with board member and Makua descendant Nathan Rout, he shares some reminders of how to come into the valley.
Come with an open mind and an open heart. Connections run differently for everybody. If you come to the valley with a certain expectation and you don't meet that expectation, you might be let down. So always come with an open mind and an open heart. A lot of the information that was part of Makua's history is lost. So my advice, if you're planning on coming on a cultural access, hydrate the night before. Prepare yourself and your body. It helps out. I know, I do it constantly.
Nathan reminds us of how physically taxing it can be to come into Makua and access certain sites. In addition to the spiritual and emotional energy of holding space for cultural practice on militarized land, cultural access is embodied, requiring physical presence and sometimes significant exertion for hours at a time. For Makua Kia'i coming on access regularly, it can take a toll over time, even as connecting with the valley offers healing and inspiration. We get up to the site and are greeted by an extensive system of old dry stack stone walls extending down the slope. We walk through, trying to feel the energy of the space. Uncle Sparky observes the stones, the pohaku, and points out certain features.
Lynette.
Wait. Oh, yes.
We're going to go back that way. I want to show you something. Entering a site, so this is would be a Hina stone, and being that it receives water, it would also end up having different significance. But around Hina, you also have Ku. And there's another one over there.
I believe you're correct.
So, now come this way. So, if you look at this one, this is another stone that fell over.
Yep.
And it looked like it would fit right around in here.
Shall we push it back up?
No, not yet.
Okay.
But as we come back this way, you got more stones that are Ku stones.
Yeah, I kind of noticed that a lot of them are lying down. We do want to make them stand up again. The Ku stones are this way. The Hina stones are flat.
And then over here,
oh, I love that. Oh my God.
All I seen was this. And a horseshoe-shaped pohaku that was buried with that stuff. But as I cleared it out, It made this little dip. So grinding herbs, putting together different either medicinals or ceremonial things. Yeah, that's solid rock underneath there. So that was actually worked for a very long time.
So the question is, what's around and how big is it? Ooh, yeah.
It's not very, it's not meant for the whole community. This is strictly a ceremonial.
Yeah, so it looks like, what do you call those things, those made out of stone that you
mortar?
Yeah, like a mortar.
Yeah.
I love it.
After spending some time here, part of the group splits off to follow the longest intact wall as far down the slope as it goes, a couple hundred feet. I return up to the road with Auntie Lynette and Uncle Sparky to ask them about an important transition within Malama Makua. I'm Kenji Cataldo, and you're listening to Before Us. Over the past episodes, we've learned about the history of Malama Makua and how they fought for and won community access to the valley for cultural practice. We've gotten snapshots of life in the valley before the eviction during World War II and learned how the army managed to keep control of the valley decades beyond the end of the war. In today's episode, the final episode of this series, we're going to hear about Malama Makua's continued evolution and the latest developments in the movement for the return and restoration of Makua Valley.
Are we good to go?
Yep, good to go.
So let's see, today is October 16, and a couple weeks ago, or maybe 3 weeks ago, a bunch of us were returning from, I don't know, some cleanup or something. And got some lunch and went to Karen's house. We do that often. It was myself, Emily, Nathan. But eventually Karen came home and joined us. And Fred was in the house and he could see us. We were waving at him. So in a sense, he's kind of at the meeting, but he doesn't know what, can't hear us. And we talked about access. And every one of us, and Sparky was there too, Sparky, myself, and Karen all said basically the same thing. They were trying to figure out ways to kind of retire. It was an age thing, but also feeling kind of like a hardship, if that makes sense. So Karen said at that time she would like to see our mission encompass peace, because it doesn't. And we make some assumptions, yeah, we're going to Malama, that means we're going to make sure everything's well and healthy and peaceful. But I think she wanted it to be more specifically about peace. And so that the idea of redoing our mission statement came out of that. And so the next board meeting that we called, we began to talk about what an expanded board mission might look like. And we asked Emily, who's one of our KIE, to draft something along with justification, which she did. And so we had a long discussion about what we want. Anyway, so then we have a new mission. Instead of just Malama Makua, which means to Malama, to care for Makua Valley as a person, as someone deserving of care as a kupuna, it became bigger, and it became that we, Malama, we care for Makua for peace, global peace building, and ho'i ho'i ea. So then we would like cover everything, global peace building, and in the as we move towards life, breath, independence, and being the definition for air. And then that was it. But something happened to, I think, all of us when we made that shift, because now we can see farther and broader, just not so narrowly focused on Makua, the valley, but on all of our efforts at making Aina, which is like the whole world, making Aina right, making it well. And there's room for social justice in there, because that's part of the wellness. So that's how we kind of got to that. Sparky could probably add his own thoughts, because I wasn't the only person at that meeting.
You know, I was thinking about what got me to that point, and it was something that you said. And it was about, you know, what do you feel about certain things? And you said, I'm raging inside. I'm pissed. And at the same time, I was in the same situation, but I came out empty. I didn't have any response. There was no emotional response. And I'm saying, okay, why is it that I'm at zero? What's happening? What's going on? And it goes back to the defense of violence. They put up a fence. They deny you access to these sites. And the experience today is still denying us access. We can go in, but we cannot touch. So I moved some dead grass aside to show one of the small features that I found. Illegal. So over the generations, how we end up programming our DNA with a lot of pain. And it becomes invisible until somebody else says something like, I'm pissed. I am raging inside. And you see Hawaiians out there, and people in general, they're pissed. And some of them can express it, some cannot. Some of them go nuts, some of them do stupid things because we don't know how to handle that emotion. And a lot of it is because of our separation. They're guiding us, they're cleaning it, they're making it safe for us to walk, but they're not letting us connect in a real way. And this goes on all over society. Marines want to move, expand their place. They want to bring in more drones. They want to bring in the SEAL teams and use Hawaii as a training area. Pretty soon, we're numb. We're still raging, but we're numb because we see it every day. It's the same old shit. And what we're doing today, the little thing that we did today was huge. Because yesterday we were not allowed or able to do that. And 20 years ago, they had armed guards at the gate with the M16s challenging us. And we're on the outside and they're saying, we should line these bastards up and shoot them all. That was their response at the beginning. So being in here is huge. For me right now, I feel more full than when I was doing the tours or the hikes. Because this is, for me, this is access. And sitting quietly is my way of connecting.
This is cultural access.
The explicit emphasis on peace in their mission statement grew out of Malama Makua's relationship with the Valley over these past decades. Makua has shaped all of the members of Malama Makua, their relationship to Aina, and their mode of activism. Makua has activated kia'i, or protectors, both Kanaka Maoli and settlers, to stand up and say enough. Makua has taught people to listen and to speak. One result of the expanded mission statement is that it creates space within Malama Makua for people who have different positionalities and roles to play in peace building and connecting with other struggles.
One of our board members, Justin, really liked it. He texted me afterwards. He said, I love this mission statement because it opened space for him to network with the people like in Arizona and other Native peoples there that really needed our help. Not the help of the U.S., but help of Native groups elsewhere. And so he just really liked it so much because he is our arm in Arizona. And so he now has like justification. He can say, well, part of our mission is blah, blah. And then we can incorporate your struggle with ours because basically it's the same one. There is nothing that prevents us from doing similar kinds of partnerships for people in the Philippines or other countries who feel like they're alone. And the idea was to not let that happen because you're not alone. You may be somewhere else geographically. And basically, we get it and we'll stand with you. So that's how our mission shifted how we are thinking about our work.
It's a living thing, just like Aina. So it's always evolving. And as we got stronger, we were able to take a bolder step maybe and expanding it. Because when I first started, it was all the way on the other end of that, on the Makua, the end of the trees. And I felt like I was alone. And when I found out the military was involved and initiating the evictions because they wanted to do amphibious landings, I thought we were the only community that was facing shit like that.
The new formulation of the mission statement also grew out of previous experiences of solidarity, including other groups coming to Makua.
Do you remember Colonel London?
Yeah.
Friendly enough, but kind of arrogant.
Yeah.
And I really didn't like his arrogance. That's when we had the the students from Jeju here, as I recall, because I was trying to like live stream, but I couldn't live stream, so I just videotaped him. And he said, I recall, we're all getting ready to come in, because you sign in, you know, and all that stuff, and they were not allowed to come in. And he told us, and we said, why not? And he said, because they're from a foreign country. I said, they're not the only ones. And, you know, we have people coming in from Japan, all over Europe, all over. What's the difference? And he said, well, they're just not allowed to come in. And so they all went outside. And then I asked everybody who was present, do you guys want to go in and leave these guys out? Or you guys want to, like, pass on the access and have something out here? And everybody opted to stay out. So, and as happened, they brought their drums. It was all in a van. All their instruments.
I love
and
that.
And they did a protest. Mm. And they danced and they sang and everybody did too. And it was like awesome.
Jeju is an island in South Korea where the local community has long protested the construction of a naval base at Gangjeong Village. The student group Auntie Lynette talked about came to Makua in 2017. In her video recording, you can see the students drumming and dancing in a circle outside the locked gate, with Malama Makua members joining in.
I missed that access.
Yeah, that was...
But that's how we were. They say, no can come in, hey, no problem. We're going to be right outside the gate where we don't have to be nice.
Yeah. And by the way, I still have that video. It's on YouTube. I saved it. Okay. And then I posted it to Facebook, just so people don't forget. And we made some friends with all of those guys because we're still in touch and they'll be Facebook friends. So in a sense, we can still keep track of what's going on over there and they can track us if they want to.
In March 2023, activists in Jeju organized a memorial for Gureombi Rock, a sacred site that was dynamited 11 years earlier for the construction of the naval base.
To the Gureombi Rock Warriors of Peace, from those of us gifted to be connected to Makua Valley.
Uncle Vince recorded this message of solidarity on behalf of Malama Makua.
We stand with you, we sing with you, we chant and pray with you. We laugh and we cry with you, for we know that every single action rooted in the care and love of people and Aina strengthens the net, the web, the vibration that holds all living things in concert. Imagine no destruction. Is it time to make a stand? For all people, all Aina, driving hand in hand. Imagine all the people living aloha Aina. You may say we are dreamers, but we know it can be done. We lived it on the mountain.
The new mission to Malama, the Valley of Makua, as the Pico of Global Peacebuilding and Ho'ihoi'ea, formalized an aspect of the struggle for Makua that had already been practiced organically for years. Solidarity with other communities in struggle against imperialism and militarization.
I'm also really kind of interested in our relationship with the military shifted. We didn't used to be friendly with them.
Through two decades of cultural access, which has forced members of Malama Makua and army personnel to spend 2 days a month together out on the Aina, Makua has also shaped Malama Makua's relationship with the army.
Back in the day, it was not the friendliest place to be with the military, and it they contracted with Hawaiians too to come in there and do like check out the live bombs, EOD, and to range control. They managed the range itself. And there were a couple guys, Hawaiians, and we were using the Ki'ipuhaku, that site where the petroglyph is, to as an informal classroom. We have been inviting all kinds of people to come in, and we invited Ron Williams, who teaches, or he was teaching back in the day, he's not teaching now, I don't think, to come and do a talk about Hawaiian history and what happened at the time of the overthrow. So he did. And, you know, all these guys are unwilling participants, but they're there. And so, you know, and so they're all listening. I remember, I forgot which colonel was, Hill maybe, some grumpy colonel. He told us afterwards, well, you know, I don't think any of that stuff is true. I mean, he just denied the whole thing, and so nobody said anything. But the two Hawaiian guys, when we were going out, we went up last, you know, we're at the tail end, they came and walked with us, and they said, I never knew that history. And thank you for sharing it. And then they said, how come I never knew that history? And to me, it just occurred to me at that moment, we always have an audience. The audience is the military, not just the people that come. And then we have an opportunity to share information. They don't have to believe it, or they can check on it, whatever. But they'll learn something too. I think that's kind of when things started to shift, and we started to look at when we're in the valley and we have to talk to people, and if we're not talking to the guys who are invited in or who came in with us on access, we should be talking to the military, because they're in a position to actually maybe do something, because that's where they work. So a little at a time. And then not long ago, last year, Sparky and I were the only ones who went in, just the two of us and the support staff. And the colonel was there, and I don't know, Captain Joe or whatever, a bunch of them, and just the two of us. That was probably one of the best accesses we have ever done. We didn't go anywhere. We sat at the table and talked. And I recall asking the colonel, what do you see as the future? I mean, like, what is your best case scenario for the future? And he said, peace on earth. And I'm gonna fall off my chair here, but he was dead serious. I saw him as a person for the very first time. I saw him as a person, not the enemy, not the guy who's in charge of everything, which he is, but as somebody who, like me, kind of cared about the world. And I don't know, he did his job, we did ours. For me, that changed everything. So we wanted to move forward by recognizing humanity in every person. For whatever reason it is that you're doing what you're doing, do you have a larger vision? And I think that's what we're trying to see. Do you guys that are like on the other side of the fence that Sparky's always talking about, this fence that makes me feel really super violent, excluded, and falsely thinking that as long as we're outside, we're safe, which is really what they're saying. And that's not even true. We need dialogue. What I call on the ground dialogue, lower level dialogue, because we're like nobody, right? Just ordinary folks. And at some point, the command will acknowledge the fact that they're just like us. They can't really do anything. They're stuck inside a system that directs them. And then after I personally realize it, and I think we all realize it, and I think our kia'i realize it as well, we have to not constantly being looking at them as enemy, but as caught. They're caught. So within the area that you're caught, what can you do to help us? That's always our question. How can you help us? And for the rest of us, we're caught, but at a lower level. I'm trying to visualize that, by the way, like a fishnet or something like that. maybe less important, but important nonetheless. So when I look at the different Kia'i who come on board, it's so hard to explain that. I can't. You guys gotta come, you gotta see.
The shift in dynamics has also shaped the training of new Kia'i.
I think it's good for Kia'i to see a visible softening. That's just my thought. Yeah. I mean, if you put any of us on the front line, it's in your face. And when I say that, I mean, we're gonna resist. We'll take what comes. We're not backing off ever. But the idea of softening is just to let people know that hardcore is hardcore in that struggle, but there are these other ways of behaving that leave openings for dialogue. Mm-hmm. And so I think those people that come on as Kia'i are witnesses. They witness, they watch. Just like you would watch your parents, you know, if you're in a position to make judgments, you can't help it. You know, the young folks that are coming on board, they cannot help but see whether or not what we say and what we do line up. And that's really important because that's what we're asking of the military. You know, if you say that you're here to protect us or you're here to help or whatever, then we're gonna see how that lines up. And you know, and a big example, I guess, is the Red Hill thing. What you're saying and what you're doing, they don't line up. I am well aware as we do these things that in the audience are a number of people who are already committed to be Kia'i and who may want to come on board. And my hope is that they will be able to see that it's not meant to insult or harm, but to give people a chance to just kind of like get real. And so, and then you can choose not to because it's maybe not the time, but there will be opportunities in the future. And so every chance we get, we're in the training mode. And I think we all have to be mindful, and we are, because when it's time for us to move back, which is like probably tomorrow, we can trust that everybody who steps forward is going to be doing the same thing because that's what they learned.
In all of this, Uncle Vince emphasizes the influence of the valley itself.
You know, the story of Malama Makua and the army is one of those David and Goliath kind of stories, you know? And the story of Hawaii regaining its national sovereignty against the United States or from the United States is a David and Goliath story, you know? It's like, if you think about it, you're like, not a chance in hell, you know? And the experience in Makua with the valley, with the Aina, with the army, in spite of the army, right, has just been, it's been an amazing story that's unfolded. And for myself, it's about the building and the nurturing of the relationships. And so that's been wonderful. And again, it's like it constantly reminds me that I'm not in charge, that Malama Makua is not in charge, that the army is not in charge, the Aina is in charge, the valley is in charge. And she's calling what she needs, you know? And so that's really inspiring, that's really comforting as well, because then whoever is in the valley when we're in the valley is called by the valley. And, you know, I say this sometimes on the access, right? It doesn't matter whether you're on the payroll or not. It doesn't matter whether you even believe you're being called by the valley or not. You're there. She's called you. And we're all influencing each other. She's influencing us, you know? And if you're not sure, I mean, if you're just there because you have work to do and you collect the paycheck, that's great. You know, we know that we're there because we're part of the process of healing. Both ourselves, our community, the Aina, the valley, and we're very clear about that. And you know, when you have that kind of clarity, you have influence, right? And it seems like people are being influenced. And presently, the Army Command is one of the most open Army Commands we've had yet. You know, so it's like it's a good sign. Yeah, it could change in 2 years. It could change next month.
But it is what it is right now, and we're gonna go for it. You know, we're gonna build as much as we can. We're gonna move forward as much as we can.
In the past few years, the movement for Makua has only gathered more energy.
Aloha, avakea kakou. Thank you for all for being here today. Today marks a day that has been long coming for many people in this community. Today we are here to announce that federal legislation has been introduced in the United States House of Representatives titled the Leandra Y Act of 2022, which formally begins the federal legislative process to demilitarize and return Makua Valley to the people of Hawaii.
In January 2022, then-Congressman Kaialii Kahele came on Cultural Access, connecting with the Valley and learning from Malama Makua. Subsequently, in March, at a press conference at Thomas Square in Honolulu, he announced the introduction of the Leandra Y Act in the U.S. House of Representatives, a bill to return the federally claimed portion of Makua to the state, developed with the support of Malama Makua.
This legislation is a step towards righting the decades worth of wrongs committed against Native Hawaiians and Hawaii's environment by the United States military. Makua is a sacred site, rich in cultural significance and biological resources. It is a site in one of Native Hawaiians' most important traditional oral histories, the Mo'olelo of Hi'iaka o Kapoli o Pele. For hundreds of years, we have written about Makua, live in Makua, practice our culture in Makua, and love Makua. Decades of military occupation and live fire training have inflicted serious damage to this aina and the people to whom Makua is so important. Beyond the environmental degradation, the military occupation of these lands have cut off Native Hawaiians from full access to cultural practices and the living touchstones which ground Native Hawaiian identity. The assault on our traditional practices and beliefs must stop now.
The bill didn't get very far in Congress, but it did bring attention to the Valley and honor Auntie Leandra for her aloha and dedication to Makua.
And as this is also Women's History Month, we are proud to name this bill for Leandra Vai, an incredible Native Hawaiian woman who dedicated her life to peace and the protection of Hawaiian land and culture. For it is not enough simply to remember the powerful women among us. We must say their names. We must elevate their work. And with the introduction of this bill in the United States Congress, we lift up Leandra Vai's name and recognize her as the extraordinary aloha aina that she was. And there is no perhaps better day than today, on Kawi Keauli's birthday, to recommit to his words. And today we must begin to do what is pono, what is just for Makua. Let me be clear, the United States military does not need this land. They do not need Makua, just like they do not need Red Hill. This bill is a reminder to the United States military and the Army that they work for the people of Hawaii, that they are accountable to the people, and that they cannot continue to harm our land and cultural resources unchecked. It is my honor to introduce this bill today. Mahalo for joining me, and aloha.
Then Representative Kahele named the significance of the location of the press conference, Thomas Square, and the date, Kawikeauli or King Kamehameha III's birthday. Thomas Square was the site of the restoration of sovereignty, the Hoʻihoʻiʻea of the Hawaiian Kingdom in 1843, after a brief unauthorized period of British occupation under rogue British Captain George Paulette. That restoration of sovereignty is celebrated on July 31st each year at Thomas Square as La Hoʻihoʻiʻea. And it was Kamehameha III who navigated Hawaii through those times as the ruling Mo'i. the press conference symbolically connected the return of Makua to that historic restoration of sovereignty, that Ho'ihoi'ea. At the same time, Malama Makua's new mission statement, to Malama Makua as a piko of peace and Ho'ihoi'ea, as Auntie Lynette explained earlier, calls forward Ho'ihoi'ea not just historically, but now and in the future. While the title of this series leads with the peace side of the mission, it is Ho'ihoi'ea that sustains the peace. Ea not only in the sense of national sovereignty, but also the ability to live on aina, practicing lifeways and culture. As a piko of Ho'ihoi'ea, Makua connects with other sites of the movement for sovereignty and land back, as well as to past, present, and future generations of Kia'i. The most recent development in the movement for Makua came in late 2023 when Earth Justice Attorney David Henkin called a meeting with Malama Makua to share a big update from the Army. After the new action was official, I hopped onto a Zoom call with Uncle Sparky and Auntie Lynette for another podcast I produce, Hawaii Rising, to share out the news. Okay, so today we're talking with Auntie Lynette Cruz and Uncle Sparky Rodriguez from Malama Makua. And we're making this special episode because we have a really exciting update about the status of Makua Valley. Auntie, Uncle, could you start by just sharing what is this new development and what does it mean for the valley?
Over the last 20 odd years, we spent a lot of time in court with the military. So far, we've won all of the judgments and the agreement. We've come up with some really good agreements from the very beginning. And 2024, we're coming up in the 20th year of peace in the Valley of No Light Fire. But the exceptional notice that we just received was that the military, this is at the Pentagon level and the presidential advisory level. So this is where they have agreed that they have no further use of live fire training in Makua from this point to forever. So basically, no more live fire, although we haven't had any live fire for 20 years. But this puts it in the hand of the federal court, and where the Secretary of the Army is the one that says, okay, he signed off on it. So it doesn't matter what command changes we go through, this is going to be written in ink at the federal court level, which is what all the military follows. So no matter what command comes in, and the generals have always said, well, I didn't say that, so we can do whatever we want. So we've always had to start from the beginning. So this is one way of going through the federal court and having the working together and coming up with a solution that we're pretty excited about.
I think it's a big deal because both the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of the Army signed off. So we had to kind of think about what does this mean? I mean, why now? What else is going on? And I know that it's more than just not using live fire training anymore. It's more than that. It doesn't mean that they're not going to do training, by the way. They will be doing training, but no live fire training. And they don't have to do quarterly reports about what's going on in the valley. But I guess the recommendation is that they not do quarterly reports, but just annual ones. And it's the way that I read it was really interesting because that took precedent, the idea of reports not having to be done quarterly. And somewhere in that section is where they inserted the idea of no live fire training. So it was interesting what popped up for us as we read that.
Yeah, and the benefit of no live fire training, they won't be adding any further UXOs to the valley. So anything they clean up will be reducing the amount of toxins and unexploded ordnance that exists there.
The joint statement in federal court is an important milestone because it establishes a shared baseline for Makua that is recognized by all parties involved, that there will never be another bullet fired or another bomb dropped in Makua ever again. With the informal status quo of no live fire training now accepted as the official military position on the future of the valley, the movement can push forward. The Army typically will not do any cleanup on active live fire ranges, but now the Army no longer has that excuse to delay remediation work. To keep up the pressure, the joint statement includes a push from Malama Makua for the Army to expand cultural access by cleaning up additional high-priority cultural sites in the valley.
Within the document, there's also a section that almost 20 years ago, we had talked about coming up with high-priority cultural sites for us to for them to clean and for us to access, for the cultural accesses that we do twice a month. So in the over the 20 years, they've cleaned up about 11 sites, and there are still 11 more that we're requesting an update for renewed effort in those areas. So some of these areas are really contaminated. So the range rules for live fire training is that no ICMs, that's the improved conventional munitions, it's like a bomblet, can be used where infantry is or where they end up going. But there's sections that ICMs are present. And as some of the rain has washed out some of the areas where the ICMs were, they've kind of migrated through the streams down towards the fence that actually empties into the public lands. So having them clean up the remaining high priority cultural sites and making it so that it's accessible for Malama Makua's access, I think is really an important reminder to them. So besides this momentous time of no live fire, we're also looking at expanding the amount of cultural access within the valley and making it so that we can get further back and also connect to some of the sites that we have not been able to get to yet.
At the beginning of November 2024, Malama Makua celebrated 20 years of no live fire training in Makua with three back-to-back days of cultural access. There had been previous celebrations marking anniversaries of peace in the valley, 10 years of peace, 15 years of peace. The 20th was extra special because of the joint statement in federal court. This time, it was a celebration of no live fire training ever again.
Peaceful is Makua in the evening. Above us all the hoku shining bright. Once we're here, we never return to Honolulu City Lights. So we stay here in Makua, where life is simple and free. Where the mountains, the valley, and the ocean make us realize where we want to be.
The fight for Makua isn't over. The Army's lease for the state-owned portion of the valley is expiring in 2029, and the next years ahead are critical in the struggle to get Makua back. Despite admitting that there's no need for Makua for live fire training, the Army is still going through the steps of applying for a new lease for Makua, as well as the other state-owned lands on Oahu at Kahuku and Poamoho. Aside from stopping a new lease, it will take federal and state legislation to get back the trust lands in Makua that the federal government has held onto through executive orders. In the critical months and years ahead, Makua and other Aina under military occupation need every Kia'i to stand and speak. They need us to listen and learn. They need our hands, our voices, our minds, and our hearts. Makua is calling. Before Us is a podcast produced by me, Kenji Cataldo. This series, Makua Piku of Peace, is produced in collaboration with Malama Makua. Today's episode features the voices of Auntie Lynette Cruz, Uncle Sparky Rodriguez, Uncle Vince Dodge, and Nathan Rout. Mahalo to the Hawaii People's Fund for allowing the rebroadcast of a portion of their podcast, Hawaii Rising. The theme music for Before Us was created by No Drama. Mahalo nui also to Robi Kahakalau for permission to use her song Makua. And mahalo to you for listening to this series. If you want to learn more or support the movement for Makua, check out Malama Makua's website at www.malamamakua.org. Aloha nui.
Realize where we wanna be on another sunny day.